How's it hang, everybody? Welcome back to Tag Team, the Pokemon Trading Card Game's premier podcasting trio. My name is Riley Holbert, joined as always by my good friends, Mr. JW Creewall and Mr. Andrew Mahone. JW fist pumping because he was said first this time. Friends, how's it going?
Hey, pretty well, Riley. Another beautiful day here in sunny Columbus, Ohio.
Is it sunny right now? It was really rainy yesterday.
It's gorgeous, bro. It's like 75, 80.
Oh, yeah, nice.
Andrew's nodding his head. It was beautiful. Did you do any yard work or anything outside, Andrew, last couple days?
I grilled.
Yeah, bro.
Let's go. Yeah.
We're outside, back. Summer is back. It's time. Dude. Yeah.
Cleaned out the grill and made some burgers and chicken and corn on the grill tonight. Yeah, it was wonderful.
Burgers and chicken and corn?
Yeah.
Like burgers and chicken?
Burgers for me, chicken for Natalie. She wanted chicken, I wanted burgers.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, I see. So, okay.
Yeah, was it burgers Natalie's or not, burger? Not,
burgers. I got one of those little four packs of burgers, and then, you know, like the, I don't know, they sell them in the supermarkets.
Yeah, yeah.
You get like the...
Like a package of burgers?
Yeah, well, you know, like they got, not the ones with like Mark Wahlberg on them, but like right around there, you know? Not the Mark Wahlbergers. You haven't seen the Mark Wahlbergers, bro?
In the stores? Yeah. No. I've only seen the restaurant.
Yeah, trust me. He's got his own burgers, bro. And they're right there in the supermarket. But anyways, not his, but like some other ones kind of like his, though. So I got a four-pack of those, made myself up all four, and then I had two tonight, and I'll have two for dinner tomorrow night.
Nice.
It's leftovers, you know?
Yeah,
on
yeah,
the grill.
Yeah. Rock on.
Did you grill them today, or are you going to grill again tomorrow?
I grilled them today, bro. And then I will just, you know, nuke them up in the microwave tomorrow and be good to go.
Hmm.
What do you,
for as much
I,
as you,
I just don't like nuking
grill,
a burger.
Yeah, as much as you hyped up the grill, if you're gonna go all the way to like clean it out, are you just really trying
burgers
to only
and
use
chicken
the
and
grill?
Corn, bro.
Are you really only trying to use the grill as little as possible? Is that really the point of having a grill?
No, I did all the cooking tonight because like tomorrow I'm gonna come home from work probably after a long day and just want to crash. And like heat up some leftovers.
That's yeah, but like, isn't the grill part of the
I really like,
wind down?
I like the cooking every other day rocks, man. Tell you what, whenever I cook, I always make sure to like prepare enough for the next day so I don't have to cook the next day. 100%.
So you're a leftover Andy.
Big leftover guy. Yeah. Uh-huh.
I don't really like having leftovers that much.
I'm not into cooking. I don't love it. I do like grilling. But I'm also not drinking right now, and that's part of the grilling experience for me.
That's a good point. That is a good point.
Uh-huh.
I feel like you could make up for it in some other way. Like, they definitely have... You can make yourself a nice little, you know, side drink, of course.
I had a seltzer.
Okay, you could have a seltzer. I was just going to say you could have a seltzer. You could have a soda. You could have a dirty soda. Yeah. You could have a non-alcoholic beer.
I've been big into mocktails lately.
Kombucha.
They're great. I know, different kinds of stuff, yeah. I just, you know, I'm taking a little break while Natalie's pregnant and stuff, just from drinking and stuff. Just like a nice kind of, like, cleanser
for myself.
A reset,
body reset.
Reset, yeah. Nice little reset. And also just because, you know, she's not drinking either. And I'm not, like, a big drinker or anything myself.
I've been to the holiday parties, man.
Well, okay, well, yeah, so you've seen me at my worst, or best, depending on your perspective. You've seen me very primed up, yes.
Yes, indeed. Well, that's a noble effort for you,
Andrew. Jane, what did you do? You didn't actually say what you did in the nice weather.
Oh, what did I do in the nice weather? Well, today, my daughter and I played outside with these refillable water balloons. Dude, Andrew... You got to get on this stuff because I'm sure your little one will love this in a couple years. But they make water balloons now that have little magnets. They're basically like orbs. They have little magnets, so they open up like a Pokeball, and then they close shut so you could refill the water balloon. It's amazing.
That's kind of cool. Less wasteful.
And so we were just filling those up in the little pool that we had, like the little standing play pool that we have.
That's awesome. Outside. That's
and then,
so cool.
And then we would like step on them. Or throw them at each other and stuff. So, yeah.
And you don't end up with like little pieces of plastic all over your lawn.
Exactly. And you don't have to actually like it's so easy. It's so easy to refill them too. It's amazing, dude. It's like
it sounds like too good to be true.
It's brilliant.
That's
really cool, actually.
I know. It's crazy. It's crazy. If I had this technology as a kid, you know, society would be...
Things would be different.
Society would be so much better, I think.
Yeah, all right, sure. What about you, Riley? What were you up to?
It wasn't as nice up here over the last couple of days. It's turned the corner now, and that's beautiful, but it was very rainy and windy this past weekend. So we tried to play tennis on Saturday, and the ball would just, like, fly back towards you after you served it. It was kind of crazy. So we stopped doing that. It was a noble effort, though. And Sunday was just rainy and miserable, so kind of just hung out and played board games, which is pretty fun. Whipped out Bunny Kingdom for the first time in a while, which is a classic. And it's supposed to be beautiful starting tomorrow, so that's really fun. And we have, like, a little work conference thing going on right now, which is cool, but the stuff most relevant to me is next week, so not a lot going on for this week for me. Yeah, it's been good. You know, I'm like ready for my seasonal depression to go away though, and for the weather to be fully turned.
I felt it. Yeah. This past weekend, I went to DC. My cousin got married. She had a beautiful wedding. It was awesome. And the wedding was a handful of blocks, less than a mile from the White House. Like, actually, just literally right there downtown. It was awesome. And so, like, all day Sunday, we stayed right across the street from the restaurant that the wedding was at. All day Sunday, kind of just woke up and, like, walked around the National Mall and played some Pokemon Go. Got some sun. It was, I mean, I could just feel my stress melting away. It was incredible.
Yeah.
And it was beautiful outside. And then drove home and, you know, feeling good about the months ahead.
Agreed.
So, NAIC reg check. Who got in?
Well, I didn't even try because I'm moving right around that weekend. So I've just been kind of on the sidelines watching terror unfold upon the community, clearly. So, like, I'm living in just a place of complete ignorance. I need to be caught up to speed. Like, what actually happened? Well,
Andrew, the funny thing is that Andrew is also living in complete ignorance.
Yeah, but he did go through it. He was just ignorant. That's different.
I got through it, but I don't really know how it happened. I'll tell my story because it's super quick. It was in the middle of GLC night. So GLC night starts at 7 p.m. Eastern. Registration was to go up at 8. So, like, Natalie paused the start of round 2 of GLC night on Thursday so that people could register if they wanted to. So I went up to my studio. I was watching the number countdown, you know, from like a minute on. I was sitting there and I'm like, all right, the number's going to get to 0 and something's going to happen. And then I watched it and I watched it count down to 0 and nothing happened. I gave it a few seconds and I was like, all right, nothing's going to happen. I expected this. So then I started refreshing. And then I went to the email because nothing was happening on my refresh page. I would refresh and the number would still say 0 at the top. And then I was like, okay, maybe I'm doing something wrong. So I went to the email and I got the link that they said I would have to go to at the time. And I clicked the link and I opened another tab and I refreshed it. And that number said 0 still as well. And nothing was happening. And I was like, all right. So then I was like, maybe I have to log out and log back in. So I logged out completely and then logged back in and refreshed on 2 different browsers. And it was still 0. So then at that point, I just opened the link in like 5 different browsers and just kept refreshing all of them. And I was just refresh. And I was going through and all of them were saying 0. And I was like, I think the website's broken, which would like be totally in line with like everything that I expect from this situation. But then sure enough, one of them went through as I was refreshing 5 different browsers at once. And this is all within the span of 3 minutes. This is 8:03 right now, right? One of them goes through at like 8:03. So I'm like, okay, all right, I think I'm in. So then once I get one of them to go through and ask for my credit card information, I'm like, oh, thank God, I'm in, right? So then I like, you know, go, I'm like, where's my wallet? I'm like, you know, hunting for my wallet and like go and get my credit card and I, you know, type all the numbers in and whatever. And I click pay, right? And then nothing happens. It just like, it goes to a next screen, but the next screen is just white. And there's no, like, congratulations, you signed up. There's no, like, none of that, right? So I'm like, what the f-? And it, so then I, like, go to my email, and I did get a notification that I, like, successfully signed up via email. But I got no confirmation on the actual portal or the page where I apparently successfully signed up. So I didn't know whether or not I had signed up or not, because it said on the email that I had, but it hadn't given me that confirmation, like, at the point of sale. So then I went and checked RK9. And when I went into RK9, there was nothing there saying that I had registered for the North American International Championships. So then I was like, well, I don't really know if I'm signed up or not, but, like, I'll ask chat on Friday, and they'll probably know. So then I didn't actually know if I was registered until I logged onto stream and, like, showed my email and the back end of RK9 to my stream and was like, what's going on here? I don't really understand. And they were like, oh, you have to jump through one more hoop in order to get fully registered. Like, you got step one, you got to do step two. And yep. This is how complicated it was from my experience of someone who got in the first wave. And I had no idea what was going on, but I did have a few hundred people on live on Twitch coaching me through it, and that ended up helping.
Yeah, I mean, you get a couple hundred people, hopefully you can figure it out.
Yeah.
You know what they say? A couple hundred heads are better than one.
It's true.
Who says that?
Many people are saying this, Riley.
All right. Well.
You're 100% right, Andrew. It was certainly one of the most bizarre registration experiences, certainly that I've ever had for a Pokemon tournament, if not for any event that I've ever tried to attend in my life. just reading the replies. Now, I didn't have to go through it. My wife did. And from her perspective, it was not very smooth either, but she was able to register for me because I was working. Okay, fellas. I had a job that night.
Really?
Yeah. Playing with the orchestra. So,
oh, nice.
Really?
I didn't actually. I know. And so I didn't actually have to.
But
go
that's
through
really
it,
but, unfortunate that you had to put your wife through that.
Well, she's so loving and kind. I know, my pregnant wife having to go through this crazy process. But yeah, for those that aren't registering, haven't registered for NAIC, aren't planning on going, basically, if I can break it all down and what Andrew is kind of referencing here, there was a new system to sign up for the North American International Championships. They'd never used this before. It was a new website. It run by a company called Rainforce, to my knowledge. And it had all these issues. Like Andrew said, there was no real confirmation when things were sold to you or if you had missed registration. So I know that there was a lot of complaints online where, especially in that first wave, people were, for 30, 40 minutes, they just didn't know that it had been sold out at that point. And so they were really trying and just wasted a lot of people's time. There were the issue of having to log in and log back out. That was said, I believe, in the email and also on the screen, but it was like in such small print that it's not very obvious. And then you would expect, as you did, Andrew, when the timer goes to zero, something should be allowed to happen on your end, right? You shouldn't have to log out and log back. That just doesn't make much.
You have to solve the puzzle cube starting out.
Doesn't make much logical sense. And then the biggest issue, I think, from my perspective, of this whole registration process is that there was a race condition for inputting your payment information. So you said, Andrew, as soon as you got through to that secondary screen, you felt good. You're like, okay, I'm in. And that would be true if we were on a normal registration website, like a Ticketmaster, like an Arcanine, like a SeatGeek, anything else where you could reserve your spot. They give you a little bit of breathing room to make your payments, put in your payment information, your credit card. And that just wasn't the case. So you were not officially registered until That's you had so put crazy. In all your payment information and gotten, that confirmation email or had that successfully processed. So that was another issue, right? Because if you're putting in your credit card and it gets declined for some reason, then you have to go back through the whole thing, do that all again. Or if you, misclick a number and it doesn't, successfully process the payment, there's just all these issues with that system. It was a debacle.
I think that sounds awesome and good, actually.
definitely generated a lot of impressions on Twitter. I mean, this is a big deal, I think, for players that had gotten comfortable with the Arcanine registration system. And I give that system a lot of credit over the last year, because we look back at NAIC last year and there were some kind of similar concerns. What basically ended up happening last year was it wasn't a pure first-come, first-served system. You were all competing in these kind of little pods against other players for very specific slots. So, for instance, if Andrew and I logged in at the same time, we would both be fighting for slot 2 instead of, you know, or whatever number. We'd be fighting for slot X instead of Andrew getting in slot X and me being in slot Y. And so that would cause maybe potentially one of us to have to try to re-register. And so it was essentially like little pods of players that would log in. That was the issue last year. This year, a whole nother thing with this new system. I give Arcanine a lot of credit because it does seem like the registration processes have been getting better over this year. It seems like we're finally in kind of a settled state with that that program in terms of signing up for the regional championships. But they decided to move away from that. I'm sure that was a decision that was made long before, you know, possibly even as a response to last year's registration process. But it just did not work out. It was horrible. Really, I can't begin to describe the amount of ineptitude that this platform, this Rainforce platform, displayed throughout this, you know, 10. I mean, it really only had to work for about 10 minutes across two waves, right? Because registration sold out. There was a lot of demand for this event. It's amazing that in 10 minutes, how many things could go wrong for each individual.
All right. So, obviously, it was a mess. It was a mess. I feel like it's a miracle I got through it, you know. I have no idea what was going on. But I did have some reassurance that I was like, nobody else knows what's going on either. So, I'm just going to keep refreshing. And, like, you know, people are going to maybe just give up. And maybe I'll get through just by pure, you know, tenacity. Force of will. Yeah. So, what would you rather see? Let's take some time to not just be.
Yeah, totally. You know, well, I'm not negative. I'm not necessarily
just critique, but like, yeah, well, right. Critiques are very valid. But like, let's not just tear it down without offering like what would be better. And obviously, there are things like they do in Japan with a lottery system. There's merit-based systems. There's obviously just a more functional first-come, first-serve system. Like, you know, what are we actually looking for here as a community?
Yeah, I think more functional first-come, first-serve for me. The players that, you know, want to be involved in this event will clear their schedule. Say what you will about, you know, kind of that specific point in time. Like, if you're working or something, like, that's really tough. Hopefully you can find that couple minutes to be there right at the start. But I think a first come first serve system for me is the, you know, most fair. Again, assuming that there's no race condition for putting in your actual payment information, assuming that it's just first come first serve on if you can click a button, again, like we have with Arcanine registration, that to me feels the best. I would really not like to have a pure lottery system if we can avoid that.
Yeah, I'm kind of neutral, to be honest. I think first come first serve is generally just the fairest way to do it, you know, being present in the moment, just registering. Usually you'll get there, right, if you're logging on right away and doing it. At least that's been my experience with like Arcanine tournaments, especially this past season. I haven't had any trouble outside of, I guess, NAIC for like registering for things. There's been a lot of discussion online about, you know, whether or not the top level players, quote unquote, should get their spot pre-selected for them, basically, which already does functionally happen, right? Like the stipend players get to register early. But there was even more discussion about, you know, other folks who think they're at the top of the game and whether or not they should be entitled to play or not. I would kind of argue that's also just a fundamental misunderstanding of what these events are. I would argue the tournament is not even really what these tournaments are about. They are basically Pokemon conventions at this point. Like, they have pop-up Pokemon centers. There's thousands and thousands of people in attendance. So I just don't really subscribe, I guess, to the like merit-based system for it. I get like why the stipend people should maybe have their spot pre-allocated because Pokemon's paying for them to be there. But beyond that, like first come first serve just seems fair for everybody at that point.
Yeah, I saw some discussion from Arcanine on Twitter, actually, just asking, like, you know, what would you guys prefer? Looking for feedback. Like, would you guys actually prefer that, like, every player within 50 championship points of earning their world's invite have, like, a kind of private time to sign up outside of... Right, a dedicated wave for themselves. And, like, that rings is, like, not great to me.
Yeah.
As someone who has, like, fought for many World's Invites over the course of the last decade, and, like, you know, that seems to me, like, kind of missing the whole point of the event. And I would rather see a pure lottery system before I saw a system like that.
I agree, yeah.
Implemented 100%. That, to me, ruins some of the... ruins some of the magic of the events and kind of misses what they're, you know, what they're all about. Also, to me, like, if you, like, you know, if you got there and, like, you couldn't register for NAIC and you missed by 50 points, like, tough stuff. There's always next year. Like, you know what I mean? Like, you could have overshot by 50 points. You could have not put yourself in a situation where you needed to...
You could have gotten unlucky in the game. That's a bad one, Andrew, because think about, like, on the circuit as it exists, the international championships are the best way for any player to earn championship points. You basically have to show up and have a pulse, and you're going to get at least 50 points at an international championship.
Yes.
Right? You have to go positive at an international championship.
I wouldn't even say that. You have whipped points at multiple.
Last NAIC, I went 5-4 and I finished, you know, whatever.
What about the one before that where you went like 0-4?
Okay. Well, yeah, but we played a good deck, man. It just didn't work out. Okay.
Yeah.
Just didn't work out that way. So
I don't know. Anyway. If you need all, like, and not to say that some people are more or less deserving of their invites, but, like, dude, if it's like that and you're like, I need to go 5-4 at this internats for my invite and there's no other way that I would have got it this year, then maybe this wasn't the year that you were meant to get your invite. Maybe it's next year where you get it a little easier, right? Like, maybe that's just not, like, I think that there's this, like, this kind of people feel entitled to stuff.
Well, I agree. Okay.
I was going to make the same point, actually. Yeah. My soapbox on this, you know, I definitely don't think the time should be carved out for the people close to their invite. And there's just a generic sense of entitlement by a lot of players that if they get, like, past a certain threshold, they deserve the world's invite. Sure, the threshold where you deserve your world's invite is the world's invite threshold. It already is there. Like, we don't have to reinvent that process, right?
Right.
But it's like, oh, I'm within 100 points. So everybody at my local should scoop to me. And also, I should be pre-registered for NAIC. And, you know, I'm going to get my invite that way. It's like, you get 200 free points and that's your invite? Like, that to me is like that's a joke.
I would also argue that the system is 100% fair because every other Worlds competitor is dealing with the same exact system you are. So, like,
that's not true.
If you miss
that's
out on really Reg and someone else doesn't, you all were dealing with the same set of conditions. You all, I mean, some people have an easier time qualifying for Worlds because they have more money or more free time or whatever.
Yes, but I mean,
everybody was dealing with this.
I'll let you.
Everybody's dealing with the same, you know, kind of randomness of the NAIC registration. I don't think that it makes sense to put, you know, certain grinders up on a pedestal while maybe elbowing out people who want to attend the national championships as maybe one of their big tournaments every year that they attend. Maybe they make a family trip out of it. Maybe it's a huge thing for their family. Like, they've been playing for 20 years. They get to go to two tournaments a year. Why is that family not as deserving as the person who has gotten to attend, who has had the privilege to attend every other major tournament in the year, maybe, grinding for their Worlds invite, right? So, like, that's where it doesn't sit right with me that they're not more entitled to that event than someone who maybe plans around this all year, and this is their one major trip of the year.
Let's not also forget that U.S. Nationals, prior to becoming NAIC, had a long and storied history of people showing up out of nowhere and winning the whole tournament.
Yeah, man. Tom Dolezal comes to mind.
Yep. That's right.
Absolute legend, if you don't know this player. Had some, like, crazy streak. Like, we think about Tord winning, you know, or being in the finals of like, an insane number of international championships. It's kind of the same thing with Tom, where he would just seem to get top eights out of nowhere. Again, like you're saying, Riley, kind of not playing an entire season and then showing up and doing extremely well at the national tournament. So I'm with you guys there when you say, you know, no entitlement, no player should be above other players, but I won't back down from the fact that the best and most impactful tournament for players in North America specifically, because this is our region's international championship, designed for, you know, they wouldn't have international championships in other places if they weren't trying to attract the player base from that region. But as the most impactful tournament of the region, players need, like, a lot of players need that. I mean,
I don't disagree with you.
This is a side point, right? This is different from what you guys are saying. Yeah. I'm just saying that there is the way that the system is structured, and I think it's a major flaw with how the system is structured. The ICs are just so weighted frankly, for a lot of these players in the North American region, with the bar as high as it is, need this international championship to chase that carrot of Worlds. And they really can't do it otherwise. And so I think that's also why you're seeing a lot of disappointment that this registration process was the way it is.
I think this Worlds was the bar was set pretty high for this Worlds as far as championship points and things like that. But I think that was intentionally so. I think DPCI wanted a smaller Worlds this year. I think they're trying to, you know, have it be a smaller pool of people. And I think, like, I hate the entitlement. I hate the, like, I deserve to be able to qualify for Worlds, no matter my skill level. Like, whatever my skill level be damned. I should be able to qualify for Worlds. Like, no, if you were good enough, you know, you'd be able to qualify with everybody else that's already qualified. Right. Unless there are no qualified players, you can't really make the argument. Like, say that only 50 players from around the world qualified for Worlds. Well, maybe, who are you to say that that's not what the Pokemon company wanted, right?
Right.
Magic has a 32-player Worlds, don't they? So, like, it's, you know, who are you to say that that's not what they wanted? And it's not really your place. Like, they make the game, you're the one, and you know what the limits are and what the goals are from the onset of the season. Not always, actually, because sometimes they're really stingy with that information. But but I digress. Anyways, you know, as a competitor, it's your job to rise to that occasion if you want to qualify for Worlds on any given year, right?
Yeah, and some people can. You know, some people can rise to that level, you know, and achieve great heights. And
only if they get into NAIC.
But I think we've kind of hit those major points. You guys bring up a lot of good points surrounding entitlement. I think that's a good thing for a lot of players to hear, because, like you said, it's the threshold is the threshold. It's not 100 points before the threshold, right? It's not 200 points before the threshold. It's not because you could have a finish at Nats to make your Worlds invite that you should feel entitled to, you know, being in there. I think that's a really, really good point that you guys bring up. I'm glad you did it.
I'll just say, like, you know, I came into the game more recently than you guys, though certainly at this point, like, I'm an older player, like, relative to the majority of the player base. My first season, I did not make Worlds, and I remember going to every tournament, like, so focused on, I need to get this finish and this finish and this finish, and together they'll add up to my World Championships. And it was exhausting, and it wasn't as fun as my next season, where I just tried to kick ass at all my tournaments. I won my first regional that season, and it was awesome. And you know what? I had a lot more fun, and I was putting up better numbers anyway, just by trying my best and trying to improve as a player rather than count up my finishes and get my ideal placements. And I was like 18th or something in the final rankings for NA that season. Things work out when you focus on your fundamentals and try and play the game, and not when you get caught up in all this other random junk. And I promise you as well, you'll remember the tournaments where you were really successful and you put in a lot of work. You'll remember those more than the worlds where you went 0-2.
So true.
Facts. So that's great. Okay, great recap there, fellas, of that registration process. Pretty crazy. So we're going to move on to the second part of the cast. But before we do, we should take some time to thank the sponsor of today's podcast, Manscaped. Riley, why don't you tell folks back home a little bit more about Manscaped and their offerings?
Absolutely. Folks, Manscaped is the premier men's grooming care brand. And let me tell you, I'm a huge fan of all their stuff. Right now, I am certified wearing the Manscaped boxers, which may not be guaranteed to get you a better placement at NAIC if you made it through registration. But I'll tell you what, they might. Scientifically, we can't prove it, but you never know. It could be. But regardless of that, I use many of their products every single day. As a new mustache guy, having my beard trimmed down to appropriate levels is really important to me. So having the beard hedger has allowed me to do that at pretty much exactly the length that I want it to. You know, getting that little stubble game going is really easy with the adjustable head on the beard hedger. Also got awesome iconic products like the lawnmower and sort of standard care products like shampoos, conditioners, soaps, all that kind of fun stuff.
I do love the lawnmower 5.0 Ultra. I use that for trimming up, and the ear and nose hair trimmer, the Weed Whacker 2.0. That has been a lifesaver for me, just dealing with the nose hairs. Which the older you get, the longer they get. Really, it is.
I know. Yeah,
something I've noticed.
Me too, man. GW, what should our viewers do if any of this sounds interesting?
They should head on over to manscaped.com, use code TAGTEAM at checkout, get 20% off your order plus free shipping. Nobody likes to pay for shipping, so don't do it here. Go to use code TAGTEAM at checkout on manscaped.com, put all those things in your cart. Maybe you have somebody whose birthday is coming up. Maybe you got a little extra spending money off that tax return. Yeah, I know. So thank you so much to Manscaped for sponsoring the cast. All right, second half of the cast, we're going to be talking about some of the new cards and some of the new archetypes from Twilight Masquerade. I think there's a lot of really interesting things in this new set. I feel like it certainly has potential to be one of the more impactful sets of the Scarlet and Violet era. I don't know if you guys are feeling similarly, but I'm looking through a lot of these cards and a lot of these new proposed archetypes saying, hey, that could work. That seems kind of fun. That's something we haven't seen before. And so I'm curious to get some initial thoughts on this set.
Yeah, I wrote down a bunch of cards that I want to hit on over the course of the cast. One thing I just want to comment on as I was prepping and looking through the cards here, I feel like this set is kind of interesting in that it's got a lot of really good Pokemon, but outside of the A specs, the trainers are kind of eh. Does anyone else like catch that vibe? You know, you got Enhanced Hammer, which is really good. And, like, that might be it.
The supporters are pretty heinous. except for...
Is Kieran, well, you're
okay.
Thinking?
Yeah, Kieran. No, Carmine.
Carmine. Yeah, Carmine. I was going to say Carmine. Yep.
Discard your hand, draw 5.
Lugia is so bad.
You can play it on your first turn. Let's go.
This is going to be the first of the refrain that you hear.
Yes, Lugia is so back. Because Lugia is so back. Yes, but a supporter card that you can play on your first turn going first, and it's just discard your hand, draw 5. Really just 2 cards shy of a Professor's Research, and you can play a turn 1 going first. Great news for Lugia fans who are anxious to get those Archeops into the discard pile. I know you've seen those Archeops sitting right there next to Research, and you're like, dang, can't do this. Have to wait till next turn. And then your opponent, oh, Ionos them to the bottom of the deck. and you never get your Archaeops set
up. That's the last you ever see of them.
Yeah.
That's fair. That's fair. Yeah, I mean, I think, though, relatively speaking, outside of Aspects, trainers are maybe weaker than some of the other sets we've seen recently. I don't have anything mind-blowing in terms of trainers, but there's a lot of really good Pokemon in this set, which is great in the spirit of building new archetypes, right, and enhancing existing ones with, you know, new powerful techs. So I'm really excited to jump into it. JW, I know there's one card in particular that you've been really excited about in the lead up to Twilight Masquerade. Do you want to kick us off there?
Yeah, well, okay, Iron Thorns, kind of insane card, you know, if we think about if we think about the Empoleon V, also a pretty good card.
No.
Stop talking about Empoleon V. Just the Iron Thorns.
Very GWs. Playable back in the day. You see, there's a lot of similarities between the two cards, Empoleon V.
You're and weakening Iron. Your case.
But the
you're Iron... losing them, JW.
Okay. They've already clicked off. These are the people that are still here.
Are true Thorns heads.
They're true Thorns heads. They're true believers. But Iron Thorns EX has the initialize ability. As long as this Pokemon's in the active spot, Pokemon with a rule box in play have no ability. So you're shutting down just so much juice out there. I mean, you think about Pidgeot, you think about Charizard. You know, this is the tier S deck of the format. You just shut that whole thing down. Lumineon,
Lugia,
you know, Rotom. The list goes on of all these good support cards or... you know, kind of main attackers that have their abilities just shut off completely with an Iron Thorns in the active. So the archetype that is cropping up is a pure Iron Thorns deck, so it's not really a tech. You know, in the past when players played Empoleon V, it was often a tech in another deck.
Because it was way worse.
Well, okay, you know, some would say. But Iron Thorns itself can hold its own, right? And it gets a lot of help with things like, you know, all the hammer support, right? You got Crushing Hammer, so a lot of this disruption, Crushing Hammer, Enhanced Hammer. You could potentially even play something like, you know, what am I trying to say here? You could potentially play something like the TM, Turbo Energize, to get energy accelerated into the play. You could play the juicer, the electric juicer.
I don't know, bro. We're about to cut you off, though.
Generator?
Yeah, electric generator. There we go.
Generator? Didn't you win a regional with that card?
I know. I just, you know, sometimes you forget in your old age. Okay? You play the generator, too, to accelerate some energy. So anyway, the whole point here is that you're playing the four Iron Crowns, or the four Iron Thorns.
We're about to get like the energy. Stage hook and like yank you off like an old timey cartoon.
All right. Anyways, so yes, there's the Quad Thorns deck. There are also some future box versions of Iron Thorns that I have seen, as Iron Thorns initialize ability doesn't actually turn off future Pokemon's abilities. So you can still boost its damage output with Iron Crown EX. Notably, there is a City League winning list from Limitless here that I'm looking at. It's won in Kyoto on the 28th of April. So that was just a couple days ago. Yesterday, actually. And, and yeah, it is playing like two Iron Thorns and three Iron Hands. It's kind of like a fusion of like the Turbo Hands deck with a couple of Thorns in the mix too. So I really think that there could be a couple different ways to play Thorns effectively. Either splashing it into like the proven Turbo Hands deck, which may also be a totally fraudulent deck. Maybe this is what it needs to become a real deck again. Or maybe just being the purely, you know, disruptive Quad Thorns deck, also a very real possibility.
I will say, if Lugia is so back, then Monothorn really puts the punishment on Lugia.
The problem with Monothorn is that one of the hottest new decks out of this set appears to be Dragapult EX. If you look at the City Leagues from Japan, and this could just be... the fact that Japan doesn't have the Pokemon trading card game live. They don't have a digital client. When they want to play new cards, they go to these city leagues and they play the new cards. Dang it. So, you know, there's always kind of like this overblown hype over new cards when they come out after we see the results from Japan. But I think there needs to be this kind of understanding that these city leagues are how players in Japan test. This is how they test, right? The new cards. They go to the city leagues. They play in locals. Yeah. They don't log on to the Pokemon trading card game live and, you know, fumble through terrible games of digital cards, okay? They don't do that. They just play paper at their local card stores. But Dragapult EX, regardless of that, has been doing very well. And Dragapult EX is a card that doesn't really need any abilities to set up. And even when you think about the fact that it's being paired with Rotom, Rotom can still wear a Forest Seal Stone, and you can still use that thing, even with an Iron Thorns in the active.
Yeah, I think, honestly, this is probably a good time to start segueing over to Dragapult, as this is the sort of premier archetype that's being hyped up. You know, Iron Thorns is pretty cool. I love one of those, like, silly quad of a guy and play a bunch of silly item cards decks. Like, they're just funny. And Iron Thorns is, I think, great for that kind of style of deck. Dragapult obviously getting a lot of hype. Like you said, Andrew, it is the top performing deck in City Leagues, clocking in somewhere at like 20-some percent of City Leagues placements. So kind of reminiscent of Charizard in previous City Leagues, which is pretty impressive. I would echo some of what you said, that City League results do not translate one-to-one for multiple reasons, right? Like, you have the sort of testing effect where people are excited to try new cards, so new decks tend to have inflated placements at City Leagues. Also, you know, effectively it is still just like kind of a League Cup sort of scenario or setting, and you wouldn't exclusively aggregate League Cup results to like determine the fate of your next format, right? Like, you would probably look towards other tournaments. I think another thing as well is just like the decks aren't fully founded yet, right? So one thing that we saw in early rotation City Leagues was that Bibarel Charizard was far and away like putting up those numbers, and that's not really something that we would kind of laugh that out of the room right now in current state of standard format. So all that has to be taken with a grain of salt. I do think Dragapult is very good. It's just to read off the stat line there: 320 HP, no weakness, stage 2 Pokemon EX, and first attack's fine, does 70 for 1, but its real star of the show is for a fire and a psychic energy phantom dive, 200 damage, and you can put 6 damage counters on your opponent's bench in any way you like. I was pretty harsh on this card last week. I think some of that was for engagement, some of that was legit. I am more warmed up to it after sitting on it for some time here. I do think the deck isn't perfect. I don't think it's quite as good as people are hyping up to be, but I think it is likely going to slot into tier 1. And it puts pressure back on the HP of those basics. You know, another card spring printed in this format is like Greninja EX. And Greninja comes with a 60 HP Proki in the set. Probably don't want to have a ton of 60 HP Prokis on your bench when Dragapult's doing 60 every turn. You can't block it without the Ravska. Like, so I think it's pretty good. JW, you've been a fan of the Dragapult as well. Give us a shot this time.
Give us a shot.
Yeah, you know, a little bit more earnest of an effort than the Iron Thorns
depth.
One.
A little bit more depth, yeah. Too. yeah, I mean, Dragapult to me seems like it's certainly the premier card, the premier archetype of this format. I mean, I think it'll be, without a doubt, the best archetype to come out of Twilight Masquerade. Could be wrong there. I mean, you look at Palafin maybe as being something that could rival it, just with that crazy amount of HP that it has and as much damage as it does for a single energy. But I do think that Dragapult is a proven concept in the sense that, you know, we've had Dragapult VMAX in the past where you hit the active and then you spread a bunch of damage counters on the bench. You bring up spreading 60 is quite good. You're taking out a lot of these low HP Pokemon that are evolving. Just a really strong amount of damage to be spreading on the opponent's side of the board every single attack, and relatively easy to set up, and probably not a card that is going to get one shot. I think that's a thing that somewhat keeps Charizard in check right now, is that it does have grass weakness. It allows things like a Spothra to exist. It allows Iron Leaves to be played in decks to, you know, great effect to have that stronger matchup into Charizard. But there's none of that with Dragapult. I think that, to me, is what separates this card from a card like Charizard. And I do see Dragapult rivaling Charizard, possibly even overtaking it as the premier archetype in the Pokemon trading card game. That's how good I think this card is.
So I got to ask y'all, how do you think the right way to play Dragapult will end up being? You know, I've seen discourse about, you know, playing a Lance heavy build almost feels like how you play the Professor Elms with the Pidgey back in the day. You just Lance every turn for all your Pokemon, evolve up the Dracloaks. You could play more of an Arvin build with, you know, the Buddy Buddy Poffins and the Nestball and Rotom and Force Heal Stone and all that kind of fun stuff. Maybe get a Max Belt in there. You can play, I guess, a mixture of the two. Tatsugiri, you know, do you play that or not? Any strong feelings about what the optimal skeleton of a Dragapult deck might look like?
I think at first I was a little too harsh on this card as well. I think the two different energy, without really seeing a reasonable way to get them both accelerated onto Dragapult, that was kind of turning me off at first, but after kind of seeing all the different ways that the players in Japan are kind of solving the problem that is the powering up Dragapult EX, I'm feeling a lot more confident about the deck as a whole, and I think it will be a Tier 1 deck for sure. I'm a little bit of hot water right now because I think I claimed during my set review live, I don't know that I put this in the... Maybe I put it in the YouTube edit. I'm not sure, but I think I claimed that Palafin had a higher chance of top eighting NAIC than Dragapult, and I am certainly eating those words right now. That's tough cookie to swallow right now.
One day into the limitless tabletop testing, and you're willing to make that call?
It was. Well, listen, you gotta have takes, right?
That's true. Good for engagement. Bro.
Not everybody's takes age perfectly, and certainly not all of mine do.
But at least you took a stand.
I took a stand, and you know what? The stand would have been sick if I was right.
Yeah.
but it wasn't. we don't know yet, but it could be bad. Anyways, I think that as these decks kind of evolve, and as Dragapult becomes like a Tier 1 deck, we're going to see the deck move to be a TM evolution-focused build. The reason for that is you want to get those benched guys evolved up as quickly as possible into bigger guys so that they can't get picked off with Dragapult EX's attack. And with TM evolution, I think playing Arvin is very good. I also really like at least a thin Zatu line. I think you need at least like a 1-1 or a 2-2 or a 1-2. I see this list I'm looking at has a 1-2 line. I think you need like a little Zatu package. And I like what I'm seeing with the Scoop Up Cyclone. There are a lot of people playing Scoop Up Cyclone with Dragapult. You can take a hit, pick up the Dragapult with Arvin that we're already playing, right? Pick up the Dragapult, and then with Zatu, you can just lay the energy right back down while drawing cards. And I think Zatu has a lot of good synergy with Dracloak's ability too. So you're just going to have this deck that's naturally growing its hand size in the same way that Gardevoir really used to, but without having to actually waste any cards to do so.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think the initial aspect that I look at for this archetype is going to be that Scoop Up Cyclone. No weakness on the Dragapult means that there's very few decks out there that are going to be able to one-shot it reasonably. I mean, we look at maybe Chen Pao. That's about it, unless I'm thinking
about something late game Charizard.
What's that?
Yeah,
it's Chen Pao and late game Charizard.
Basically. Yeah, Chen Pao and late game Charizard. Right. So nothing, and, you know, Lugia. Through that early and mid game. Lugia, okay, Cinchino. All right. Well, we'll get to Lugia. Lugia's so back, by the way. but yeah, not a ton, right? So getting the most use out of the Dragapult that you possibly can seems initially quite good, and like you said, it is a little bit of extra draw if you are able to pick up a Dragapult, play down the Dracloak, you get another card. I mean, it just seems like it has a lot of synergy with the deck.
This list I'm looking at here plays the Scoop Up Cyclone, and how gnarly is this? Silene, just like we're seeing in Chen Pao builds right now.
Oh, that's sick.
You can You can.
Well, the Silene. The Silene is especially
Silene,
nasty.
Scoop up Cyclone. Your guys are never.
Because you just draw
dying,
right back.
Yeah,
into
the Silene
it.
Is especially yeah. nasty because you're guaranteed to find it if you have a Dracloak, right? So the Silene, the Silene in the. In Chen Pao is good. It's certainly good, but you're not always guaranteed to have that low hand size to even be able to draw that card that turn. But since Dracloak's ability doesn't have any sort of hand restriction, you just get that card right back potentially. It's pretty cool. So
yeah, I mean, I think that. In a similar way that I think comparing the Iron Thorns to Empoleon is a disservice, I think this is way better than Dragapult VMAX as like a deck and a structure. I think this is like a way more exciting archetype with the Dracloak ability thrown in the mix there and like the cool combos you can put together. Whereas I always felt like Dragapult VMAX is like on the back foot. Like every game it was playing on the back foot and needed to hit like a crushing hammer to win. And this feels like a much more coherent strategy than that, even though it's a very similar card in a lot of ways.
Who's to say that Dragapult won't be playing crushing hammer to deal with the mirror?
Let's go. Discard the fires. Let's go.
Could be.
Could be sick.
One card I do see a lot of these Dragapult decks playing is either Enhanced Hammer or Temple of Sinnoh. And you know exactly why those cards are in here. We've been kind of alluding to it throughout the cast. It's because Lugia is back to its golden age, backed in its glorious form.
Well, it's not quite there, but you know, it's definitely back. It's just not to call it its golden age. Let's be for real.
It's like kind of like maybe it's bronze age. All right, yeah. It's an age. It's so back, bro. We were in the dark ages with Lugia, and we're back somewhere good.
Yeah, I mean, I went on a profound like tirade last episode about how Lugia was like the most fraudulent deck ever created. And I think Lugia has a lot of potential going to this format. And I think part of that is honestly informed by Dragapult's place in the meta. You know, the type of things that Dragapult's doing, Lugia is pretty chill with on the most part. And it gains cool new tools. Andrew, why don't you tell us a little bit about those tools that it's getting from Twilight Masquerade?
Lugia's got the new energy, the legacy energy is like kind of the big deal, right? It's a special energy, counts as a rainbow energy. Previously, all we had was the luminous energy, which couldn't be played with other special energy to give a rainbow effect. So it was really not doing what it needed to do to create this kind of rainbow toolbox situation. But now we've got legacy energy, which not only provides a rainbow energy, but also decreases the prize taken when an opponent knocks out a Pokemon with a legacy energy attached. So what we're seeing is the rainbow toolbox kind of thing is opening right back up for Lugia.
Yeah, pretty cool
right.
stuff.
Compared to where Lugia was before, of course, you don't have the ability to stack up multiple rainbows. That was one of the benefits of the Aurora energy. You only get one of the legacy energy. It is an ace spec. But, I mean, that effect is so crazy powerful. I think two of the attackers you're really looking at there are you have your Iron Hands, of course. Welcome addition to Lugia and offsetting those single prize matchups. We also have the new Wellspring Ogre Pond, which synergizes perfectly with a single rainbow energy. You got the Torrential Pump to do 100. And then if you shuffle those three energy back into the deck, you do 120 to the bench. So lots of ways for Lugia to finagle his extra prizes. So in the spirit of what you're talking about, Andrew, like those are traits that Lugia had back in its golden age. You know, they're not exactly the same manifestations of those traits, but they are very powerful effects and certainly welcome. Lugia, of course, will miss the consistency of the Master Ball. I think Lugia still will suffer from generic consistency problems. But, you know, Lugia does put up numbers against Dragapult. It can take those one shots with the Chinchino. It has a lot of new options against a lot of different decks in the format. I think this is it's a really exciting time to be a Lugia head. GW, you look pensive over there. What are your thoughts on Lug?
Dude, Lugia is
so excited
so
to talk about it.
Lugia is so back, man. I think that this combo is quite good. The one thing that we've been missing for the Lugia deck has been the colored special energy. It's limited us so much. You know, players are playing multiple Snorlax, right? We have to put this very thick line of Cinchino in. Very thick line of Lugia to, you know, have attackers to set up in the mid late game. But now you have a colored special energy. Granted, it's only a one of, you can play in your deck, but you do have it. And it opens up a whole new dimension that Lugia didn't have. I mean, we can't overstate just how good it would be for a Lugia deck to have this kind of snipe potential, especially a snipe that does 120 to the bench. What has 120 that's very popular right now? Bibarel, right? So against those Arceus decks, against those Charizard decks, being able to snipe a Bibarel from the active is, you know, is quite good. Quite good. So I'm really excited about these new cards, the new dimension that it gives to Lugia. And if we just think about, you know, Lugia's strong matchup in this last format, you know, I think that it'll maintain kind of an optimistic matchup into Dragapult, being one of the only decks that can one-shot it.
Another cool thing I really like is that Aqua Return is back on the table. I mean, for like an entire year, we were not Aqua returning, you know, which sucks when you got that Luminion down and you got to just like knock out a single prizer or something. And you're like, I can't even Aqua Return this fool here on my bench. He's just stuck here. Now you can put the legacy on a Luminion, Aqua Return back to the deck. Same with the Wellspring Mask Gogerpon. You can just swing with it. The energy goes back to the deck. So you're really getting a lot of mileage out of that one legacy energy. And then if you would like to, you can always slam down the Iron Hands, load it up, and take two prizes on an unsuspecting target, a Radiant Greninja, a low HP Pokemon, Manaphy, whatever. Lugia decks always play a lot of bosses' orders. God forbid your opponent put their own Luminion V down. Serena. Boss's orders, whatever. We're bringing up that Luminion V, and Iron Hands is just taking three prizes on it, right? Lugia will just always have that option now, which is crazy.
Well, it also can just grab that on, like, turn two, right? You know, you can jet energy that sucker into the active and accelerate to it and knock out, like, a Charmander or knock out a Dreepy. And Dragon Ball doesn't really have a good response to, like, Iron Hands coming out immediately and knocking it out, especially if they're not playing, like, a tool card and hitting that immediately to take those knockouts. So yeah, Lugia seems like it's really good. Again, I do think it'll suffer from some of the same consistency problems that it's had. I don't think those really change with this new format. Doesn't get any new like item cards to beef up its consistency. Just get the Carmine. But I think, you know, the pros outweigh the cons here. It's going to be a huge dub for Lugia fans here. And Carmine is a big deal in some ways. Being able to like Luminion for it immediately is really nice.
That's a really good point. One other major card is the Blood Moon Ursaluna. That is a card you could play in Lugia to kind of segue, but it's also seeing some success in Lost Box decks. We've talked about this card a little bit before, where for all intents and purposes, it can act as, you know, it has a similar function to Radiant Charizard. And so a lot of players are playing it in the Lost Box decks as a replacement to Charizard, and then that opens them up to playing a different Radiant Pokemon. Probably the Greninja gives a little bit more flexibility of attack, and of course that draw power that the Lost Box decks so desperately need. So what are we thinking about Blood Moon Ursaluna? Are we thinking about that as a card that could slot into Lugia, you know, well? Are you thinking about that as kind of the primary function of Blood Moon? Are you thinking of that as, you know, just a card that slots into any random deck? Are you thinking of it as more of a Lost Box deck? Like, where are we at with Blood Moon Ursaluna?
Hal, I'll let you go in just a second, Andrew. I think Blood Moon will be best serviced as a Radiant Charizard pseudo replacement in like a Lost Box future ancient sort of deck. You know, because then you have just these insane multi-pronged approach that you're rocking. You have the threat of Greninjas if you want it. You have the Iron Hands. You have the Roaring Moons. You have Blood Moon. You can really just do whatever you want. Blood Moon is also pretty tanky. It can survive a hit from quite a few different decks. And so I think it's just generically good. I don't know if it'll see like an overwhelming amount of play. It's certainly a solid card. People were excited for it when it was first revealed. I think the scope of its impact will be relatively limited.
Yeah, I'm kind of seeing it as a Lost Box card and a Lugia card right now. The fact that it, I mean, really, when you think about Lost Box decks, being able to pull out those like late game Iono, Roxanne, usually Roxanne, right? You're going to Roxanne your opponent to two and swing. You're in a situation now where like your opponent, you know, may be denied the ability to take prizes as you kind of swing with this Blood Moon Ursaluna, if you can kind of take out their only guy. I mean, previously, you know, Radiant Charizard, if that was your closer, has, what, 160 hit points, you know, relatively easy to knock out. 260, though, is a lot. If your opponent's only got one prize remaining and you're coming with a Blood Moon Ursaluna, they may not be able to knock that out easily. So, like, you could theoretically pump out 240 damage twice, which is just an insane amount of damage to pump out when your opponent only has one prize left to take. Kind of acting as a wall, you know, with 260 hit points as a basic that you could just kind of put that into play, is pretty insane. So I do think that the card has a lot of potential and is going to be a card that we see around the entire time that it's legal, just because it's that good.
Yeah, agreed. One other archetype that we've alluded to, at least in form of tech cards, but we haven't paid any lip service to since the episode the cards were revealed, the Ogrepons themselves, you know, the various different masks and the mass change. Does this have any legs, or is this just pure gimmick territory?
Yeah, it's a gimmick.
It's a meme, bro. Yeah.
It can't work. It can't work, right? No one's sitting here thinking that Ogrepan has any advantage in any aspect, right? It doesn't really have an advantage in type. It doesn't really have an advantage in the amount of draw power. There's no real competitive advantage to be able to change types randomly. There's just no aspect about this archetype in the way that it's designed that would give me hope that it's playable.
I mean, my Twitch chat, they love spicy decks, right? They love the crazy decks. And in Japan, they love playing the spicy new cards. They love it. They love it, okay? A new gimmick, they're all about it. I think of all of the results from Japan's City Leagues over the weekend, I think there was one single Ogrepan box that finished 11th place at one City League. It's like, chat wanted me to go look at the damning list. I'm like, bro, no, I'm not looking at the 11th place list from such and such City League, dog. Like, no. It's it's an Ogrepan box. Like, it does the Ogrepan thing. It just so happens that the Ogrepan thing is just not very good, unfortunately.
Yeah, I mean, that's a pretty damning statement there. Two other cards that were on my list that I think it would be unfair to not at least mention. We talked a little bit about Palafin the other week here. How are we feeling a little bit closer to set drop about Palafin?
Yeah, it seems like the one archetype that could challenge Dragapult as being like a premier archetype from the set, but I maybe don't have as high of hopes after seeing some of the results that have been uploaded from the City Leagues. Just doesn't seem like it's performing particularly well in Japan right now.
I think I initially had really high hopes for Palafin EX because I was kind of like comparing it to Charizard. And when I was comparing it to Charizard, I was like, this guy's got 340 hit points and he starts cranking out 250 damage like turn two. That's just going to be really tough for Charizard to deal with. And it's kind of like my concept of the metagame had been very Charizard warped. But now I'm starting to think of things as like a Dragapult focused metagame. And like, how does Palafin actually stack up against Dragapult? Well, these Dunsparce that have free retreat and allow the Palafin deck to operate only have 60 hit points. That is terrible news, right? Yeah. Like almost disqualifying. And then you ask yourself, what about what Palafin does? Is that good against Dragapult? Well, it swings for 250 damage. Dragapult is playing Scoop Up Cyclone and can heal itself. And you could even play Silene to do that Scoop Up Cyclone again. Palafin cannot be scooped and reused easily because of its hero spirit ability, which, you know, has to be put into play with this very roundabout way. You can't just scoop it up and lay it back down. So I actually think, like, now that I've had some time to kind of marinate on these cards, Dragapult just is the superior card. It's going to play better in the new metagame. It's going to be a card that plays better with the new Scoop Up Cyclone. Originally, I kind of wrote off Scoop Up Cyclone, but then I kind of have come to my senses and realized just how... Man. How big these Pokemon are now, man. They're so freaking big, bro.
Scoop Up Cyclone's always been nuts, to be fair. That card's crazy. It's so good. I think I do want to bring one. It doesn't have to necessarily have credence to it, but the logical counterpoint in that argument is that with a Max Belt and a Kyurid, that Palafin is knocking out Dragapults, right? And, you know, I don't know if that would actually, like, practically work, but that's probably how you have to play Palafin, right, is to be able to take those big knockouts, which is kind of spicy, you know, if nothing else. You said chat loves spicy decks, so it's good content, if nothing else.
I like the way you think. That's good. That's good, Riley. That's good.
I think the one last card that was on my list, which we've already started to be on the tail end of hype for last time we chatted, was the Greninja EX. We've kind of hit on the points here. It has Rapid Flow and the Ninja Blade for one water energy does 170, and you can search for a card, so you're basically able to chain these Rapid Flows with the Greninja EX here. Greninja was printed alongside a Froakie that does has 60 HP. I don't know if there's another Froakie in format. I guess I can check that right now. Do we have any sort of feelings about the Greninja?
What do you think, JW?
Well, how I was seeing it was played
there's
along...
There's a 70 hit point guy in Obsidian Flames, sorry.
Thank goodness.
How I was seeing it played was alongside Pidgeot, and I think that's really interesting. I initially, like, the more that I look at these and study these Japanese results, the less I'm seeing kind of a huge influence from Greninja, but it's still there, and so it does give me hope that, you know, it could manifest into something. Now, again, if we're saying the big bad of this format or of this new set is going to be Dragapult, you're looking at issues there. Again, just having to evolve into a Dragapult infested metagame, probably not what you want to be doing, but certainly, you know, has promise, right? Talk about the Rapid Flow. It seems that Pokemon is emphasizing Snipe with some of these more recent sets, which you can pull off some pretty crazy comebacks with some of these Snipe attacks that they have, and then obviously being able to search out any card repeatedly, turn after turn, with that first attack on the Greninja. Quite good. So I think the jury remains to be seen. I feel like there's a lot of innovation that could happen with these lists, whether they want to play more disruption, whether they want to play just more consistent based builds with Pidgeot as a backup. That remains to be seen. This is the big kind of big question mark. I think in a vacuum, this card quite good, but I haven't seen any lists so far that I've been wowed with.
Yeah. It feels like it's missing the cards it really wants to search for in a way.
Yeah,
like,
right. Right.
Like, combos are you putting together? There's the Canceling Clone on the Manaphy, and that's about it.
It feels to me like, that Dragapult is the stronger of the two cards. When we're talking about, like, kind of spreading damage, right? If your thesis is to, you know, set up this big guy who takes multiple prizes over the course of turns to, and kind of picks your opponent's board apart, right? You have these two guys that can kind of do that, Dragapult and Greninja EX. I think Dragapult is just the superior card. It doesn't have a weakness. Its damage counters aren't affected by Manaphy, which is like the premier bench saver in standard format right now. Greninja is blocked by Manaphy, and Dragapult's just going to have, I think, a better time in standard. If Greninja were to rise as like a counter to Dragapult, I think it would have to be this deck that's just like built to get this turn to Prime Catcher, Manaphy, Canceling Cologne, Duplicate Barrage, both Dracloak or both Dreepy, right? And it's like, right, that is the one trick that the Greninja deck can do that the Dragapult deck cannot really replicate as easily. So, you know, if Greninja has any foothold it's going to be this deck that just viciously gusts up mana fees and cancel clones them, and like, and will just duplicate barrage all the little guys before they have any chance to evolve whatsoever.
So here's a, here's another question I have, right? Like, we had talked about how both of these cards sort of are built around this kind of comeback, assemble lots of damage all over the board type of strategies. There's not really a good way to defend against Dragapult, right? Like, the Jirachi does not work against Dragapult because Jirachi only blocks attacks from basic Pokemon. The only card that actually really does it is Rabska. Is there ever a world where Rabska is actually viable, or do we just have to take the counters?
I think you got to eat it. I think you got to eat it. I don't think that there's a way around it, a reasonable way around it. Having to evolve into a Rabska, I mean, there's going to be that turn that you're vulnerable. Certainly, do I think that Rabska will see no play? No. I think there will be some strategy that, you know, comes out, some deck that will be able to fit in the Rabska and get it out reasonably well. I mean, dude, we saw players try to play, you know, Aerodactyl V-Star to counter Lugia, right? So these kinds of 1-1 strategies to try to account for a deck have existed in the past, but it just doesn't seem like the kind of thing that we'll see widespread adoption from a lot of decks.
All right. I'm going to take the other side of the coin here. At the 2018 World Championships, I think it was 2017 was Guardi legal for? Was it 2017?
2017. Yeah, brother.
2017.
2017. At the 2017 World Championships, I played a pretty terrible Gardevoir EX deck, okay? Me and Natalie lovingly call this Guardi Machoke, okay? And Guardi Machoke was built purely to counter Decidueye GX. I was very worried about Decidueye GX spreading damage counters on my Gardevoir and devolving them and leaving me absolutely hopeless. So I devised a plan where you use Diancie to insta-evolve your Machoke up on turn one, and that just completely shut down the Decidueye deck because they could only snipe to the active, and that was pretty miserable. And sure enough, I had a 100-0 matchup against Decidueye. At the World Championships, I played against a Decidueye deck, and I destroyed it. I did lose to just about everything else that I played against. Turns out Drampagarb was like the deck to beat, not Decidueye, and I just teched for the wrong thing entirely. But it worked. And I think that in a format with TM Evolution, we could very easily see a turn one TM Evolution into Rabska situation. And if you're playing a Dragapult Mirror and your opponent goes to turn one TM Evo into Rabska Dracloak on the bench, you're go, bud, and you don't have the Rabska, all of a sudden you're looking kind of sorry there, man. Like, yeah. You got to gust that thing up and do 200 damage to it? Who wants to do that?
That was kind of my thought process as well, Andrew. So you're making me look a little bit like a fraud, but I think, you know, realistically you pair it with the TM, right? And you don't deal with the evolution as a consequence. You just get it out as a byproduct of whatever other strategy you're doing. And then it's just there. And it eats up some damage. If they want to gust it, then they're gusting a one prizer and not damaging the bench, which is an acceptable trade, I would say, in a majority of cases. So I think there's some legs there, you know. There's also the funny other Rabska, if you really want to try and do something spicy, you know, play both Rabskas. The other point that I would make is I think Tord has pretty definitively shown the power of having like a 1-1 inclusion in your deck. And I think the community has been a little turned off on those kinds of inclusions in decks historically. But I think we have shown that they have staying power and legs. I think realistically, if Rabska gets played at all, it's going to be in the Dragapult Mirror, most likely, where you can TM Evo it and get a leg up.
Deck lists are getting weirder, man. And I like it. I do.
It's more interesting, yeah. You know, we had talked for a long time on the cast about how, like, a lot of the best decks play, you know, four of everything. And in some ways, that's still generically true, but you have to find where the spaces are to carve out those, like, meaningful inclusions. I think what Tord does really well is like the B barrel is a tech, right? He's playing the 1/1 B barrel as a sort of tech in his deck. It's not really a matchup tech though. It's just like I make my deck awesome tech. And I think we could all learn from that.
The 1/1 B barrel is like not even radical. I mean, think about it. We played 1/1 Octilleries and Buzzrock and didn't think anything of it the entire time. Like almost. It started as a 2/2, but then as lists got refined, it made its way to a 1/1, and we never looked back. We were like, you only really need that sucker by the time you're getting end to two anyway. So like, just get them out before then. So,
yeah, for sure. I think there's definitely merit and value in like amping up the consistency where you can in your deck. But if you can make like a meaningful difference in the way your deck is operating with a 1/1 tech, and I'm not saying that Rapska is necessarily that card, but if you can, like, you take those chances, I think. You take those opportunities when they present themselves. And Tor took that, for example, with the B-Barrel in his Charizard list. Maybe Dragapult will take that with Rapska for the mirror. Maybe they won't. I mean, maybe they find some other stage one. Some other funnier stage one. That'd be awesome. And I'm for that, personally.
Think just one more comment on Rapska, because I'm actually really far down the Rapska rabbit hole right now. Think about, okay, turn one, going first. Say you're going first in the Dragapult mirror. You get out your Relor, okay? And then you evolve into Rapska. Turn two, who cares? If you're going second, you TM Evo it. Who cares?
Yeah, I'm with you, man. I'm with you.
Yeah, so like, it should just be safe.
Also, Relor's awesome, actually, man. So sick. Holy moly. It's actually the best card ever printed. Oh my god.
I'm just telling you, GW, open up Pokemon cards and look up the Relor from Temporal Forces in real time right now.
Okay. Oh yeah, yeah. I'm looking at him right now, man.
You're telling me if you're staring down this guy that you have a winner's mindset right now? Like if this guy is looking across from your opponent's side of the board at you, that you have a winner's mindset, you're off the planet. You're tilted. You're done.
You're getting spanked by that Relor for sure.
Look at him. He's got you cooked.
Okay, well, you may have convinced me.
That art is so excellent. I think it really lays a number on your opponent the minute you whip that out.
Yeah, a number two.
Specifically a number two.
Yeah, well, I think there awesome. Is, I mean, there's more that we haven't covered here on this episode from Twilight Masquerade, so I'm really excited to, you know, continue to discuss some of these cards and archetypes, especially as we see more and more refined lists coming out from either you know, our own testing, things that we see on social media, or from the Japanese results. So this will certainly not be the end of this discussion, but it will mark the end of our chat here today on this cast. Thank you all so much for listening. If you want to get more involved in the podcast, you can find us on social media at the X platform. I am at Real John Walter. We have at Enjoy Friend for Andrew and at Smiles with Riles for Riley, as well as the podcast at Tag Team Pokemon.
Thank you all so much, as always, for listening, and we'll catch you next time. Peace.